Yo, where that other one at? I like this one. Just let it go, Pring. Z06 vet, gripping, feeling almost there. Listening to Bon Jovi, rolling, living on a prayer. Privy to the gossip that's been said about me constant. It's the life and times of Bumpy Johnson meets Nucky Thompson. I used to rap about death, now I'm only concerned to live. I value relationships still, I keep it competitive. Nowadays, chances are that if you see me throw the match, it ain't to lose the fight. It's
welcome, everyone, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL for BleacherReport.com, SportsOnEarth.com, Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and TheSportsDaily.com. I am joined this week, like every week, by my co-host Brian.
Hey there.
Not long now. 2 weeks until the National Football League kicks off its 2015 regular season with the Pittsburgh Steelers taking on the New England Patriots.
You can almost feel it.
You can almost feel it in the air, especially because it's been kind of chilly in Chicago all week here. Felt a lot like fall.
Oh, tonight was beautiful, though.
Tonight's all right. But, yeah, it's been football weather, we'll say, in Chicago for the past couple of days. So gets us prepared for what we have been anticipating since the Super Bowl ended and the Patriots were champions.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for the next season to begin. We're also going to be continuing on our divisional previews this week, this time with the AFC South. We will not have any guest assistance with this, but as you all listened last week, we can handle ourselves just fine. But before we get to that point in the show, let's talk about a few items of note around the National Football League. Let's start with that first regular season game with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots. It was already hindered by, of course, the four-game suspension for Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, which, again, I fully expect to be completely reversed in the coming days. But there's also the fact that Patriots running back LeGarrette Blount, he's suspended for that game. Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell, he's suspended for the first two games of the season. Steelers center Marquise Pouncey suffered a fractured ankle that required surgical repair in the preseason game over the weekend against the Green Bay Packers. He will not be available for the game. The New England Patriots receiving core struggling through a number of injuries, so who knows who's going to be on the field as a receiver for Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo if that gets to that point. And now, Steelers receiver Martavis Bryant has reportedly been suspended for four games for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. The matter is under appeal, but the fact that it's a four-game suspension pretty much indicates that this is at least the third time that Bryant has been popped with a positive drug test, which means, of course, the next step is the Josh Gordon 10 games, and then the next step after that is the Josh Gordon indefinite suspension. So that's something the Steelers are going to have to keep an eye on.
Is that just known as the Josh Gordon suspension, though?
No, I just call it that. I'm just calling it that. No
I
one
think
else
it should be, honestly. But
well, you can also call it the Justin Blackmon.
Oh, yeah, good point. Good point.
But the thing is, as far as this first game is concerned, all of a sudden it's starting to look like a sixth preseason game for the Steelers or a fourth or a fifth preseason game for the Patriots if all of these guys really are going to be out. I mean, it's going to be worth watching because it's regular season football. But on the other hand, we're not going to be seeing the Patriots, even if Tom Brady's out there, the Patriots or the Steelers at full offensive strength to open the season.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And there's half of them are marijuana related. We should say.
Yes, LeGarrette Blount, Le'Veon Bell, and Martavis Bryant are all marijuana related suspensions. And also, it's also frustrating for the Steelers because they've expected so much out of Martavis Bryant this year. He had a breakout rookie season, played in 10 regular season games, had 8 touchdowns and 549 yards on just 26 regular season receptions. They're expecting a big leap out of him this year. And apparently we're blindsided by the news of Bryant's suspension, that they didn't see this coming, that they didn't really know that this was going to be an issue. They do have Marcus Wheaton. Again, they're expecting a lot out of him this year. Antonio Brown, of course, and Heath Miller. But suddenly, Darius Hayward-Bey is going to be the guy to step in and be their number three wideout. They did draft Sammy Coates this year. But Coates, you know, he's a rookie and he's just starting to kind of understand the nuances of his position. I would expect Sammy Coates to be more of a Martavis Bryant type player and that the Steelers will try to rely more on him later in the season rather than early on.
I hope he comes around by later in the season at least.
Right.
Yeah.
So this looks like a situation where we're going to have Darius Heyward-Bey as the Steelers' number three wideout to start the first four games of the season. I mean, he's been a useful contributor on special teams. Only had, I think, three catches last year for the Steelers. Wasn't really used widely as a receiver. But I guess now they're going to have to prepare, you know, because they've had all this time. They've known for some time about this Le'Veon Bell suspension and could prepare accordingly by picking up D'Angelo Williams in the offseason and then getting Williams prepared to be the starter those first two games. Now they don't really have a lot of time to kind of work Darius Heyward-Bey and or Sammy
Coates. It's like scramble mode.
Yeah, they're kind of in scramble mode to kind of get these guys installed with the first team. So I would expect with, of course, the dress rehearsal week of preseason action coming in these next few days, that we're probably going to see a little bit less of Martavis Bryant with that first team offense and try to get Darius Heyward-Bey kind of in that rotation and getting real comfortable with Ben Roethlisberger. Other news this week includes also the Steelers surrounding the Steelers. We brought up, of course, the Marquise Pouncey injury at center. They signed Doug Legursky to be the backup for
Pouncey. Yeah.
No. Cody Wallace, who will be the starting center for the Steelers while Pouncey is out, whether that's 8 weeks or the entire season. The Steelers also suffered another injury to their backup quarterback position. Number two quarterback Bruce Gradkowski, who started the summer on the physically unable to perform list, was brought back onto the active roster, but he re-injured that shoulder that had him sidelined for much of the summer and injured his hand, has to get a couple of surgeries. So they put him on injured reserve and signed Michael Vick to be Ben Roethlisberger's primary backup. They do have Landry Jones. This is Landry Jones' third year with the Steelers, but they just really haven't seen much enough out of that out of the kid to feel comfortable with him stepping in for Roethlisberger should something happen to Roethlisberger.
It's a very nice way to put that.
Yes, it is a nice way to put it. On top of all that, there have been other injuries around the league. Green Bay Packers receiver Jordy Nelson suffered a torn ACL in that game that also saw Marquise Pouncey fracture his ankle. He is out for the season. Junior Gallette, recently acquired by Washington, if you recall a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the NFC East and how Gallette was grateful to be part of, quote, a functional organization like Washington, has suffered a season-ending torn Achilles, so Washington will not have his services. And the Baltimore Ravens are anxiously awaiting their round one draft pick, receiver Breshad Perriman, to be given a full, clean bill of health. He has a knee injury that is lingering a lot longer than they had first anticipated. At first, they thought maybe it would be a day, maybe a couple of days, but that was at the end of July, and he still has yet to practice, so they're kind of scrambling to find other guys on the roster, guys like Marlon Brown, Kamar Aiken, Michael Campanaro, to step in for that role. But they had a lot of expectations for Perriman this year as a field stretcher,
along
the same lines of as what Torrey Smith was doing for them there, with even, you know, a little bit of added upside in terms of more reliable hands. So they're not going to have him for an indefinite period of time. They haven't made any sort of decision about what to do with him in terms of IR recall or, you know, definitively saying he's not going to be ready for week one. But that's a big question mark, especially because, again, you're talking about a rookie receiver and he's not had the reps on the field. And he can take all the mental reps he wants, but unless he's out there running routes against defensive backs, you know, he's not really going to be ready to go. It's not the same. Not the same. And also, Johnny Manziel fever has been reduced by the Advil known as Manziel's elbow.
Yeah, it flared up after last preseason game because of like two plays, and then yes, it certainly cooled off a little bit after that. So
Manziel mania.
Manziel fever.
Manziel fever, but now he has soreness in his throwing elbow, something that has plagued him off and on since high school. The Browns have decided to shut him down for the final two games of the preseason, which definitely now means we can use Penn to say that Josh McCown will be the Browns' week one starting quarterback.
Well, you've been using Penn for a couple of weeks.
Using Penn for a couple of weeks. Now we can all use Penn confirm that Josh McCown will be the Browns' starter come week one. They have Thaddeus Lewis also on the roster. They have also Connor Shaw, but he had thumb surgery, so he is not currently available to play. The team did sign a quarterback on Thursday, Pat Devlin. Sorry, the name kind of escaped me there for a minute. Pat Devlin, who spent a little bit of time in Miami with the Dolphins when Browns quarterbacks coach Kevin O'Connell was down there. So that's why they decided on Pat Devlin.
Okay.
So that's basically what's happened around the league this week. We don't have any updates about the Tom Brady situation. Russell Wilson claims that his special nano bubbles in his recovery water can cure a concussion. Which makes it sound like Russell Wilson's had more concussions than not.
Well, he should just make his way around the league, like sprinkling that stuff on people's knees and ankles and whatnot, and see how it works, you know.
But I'm really excited for this week's slate of preseason games because, again, as we said, it's the dress rehearsal game. We're going to see starters on the field for as much as the first half, maybe into the third quarters of some of these games. A couple of them are really interesting to me. The Denver Broncos versus the San Francisco 49ers, the Detroit Lions versus the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Minnesota Vikings versus the Dallas Cowboys in particular. Broncos, Niners, of course, because we're going to get our first really extended look at this Niners roster that has been decimated by suspensions and arrests and injuries and retirements.
And now they lost another guy.
And they lost another guy. He's not going to be around much longer, linebacker Ahmad Brooks. After the latest charges that have
playing.
Surfaced. He's not playing.
Yeah, he's not playing this
he's
week,
being kept so. Away from the team, but he has not been cut yet.
Right.
Also, just interesting to see Peyton Manning out there on the field against probably what's going to be a 49ers defense that isn't going to be as threatening as it once was. Though they do have Navarro Bowman back, which is a good plus considering all of the minuses that have taken place on that roster.
Yeah, they got like Navarro Bowman back, and he's like by himself.
Essentially. the reason what interests me about the Lions versus the Jaguars is the Jacksonville Jaguars' biggest weakness by far last year, and we'll get into this when we talk about the AFC South, was that offensive line that gave up 71 sacks in 2014. And while the Detroit Lions front seven lost Nick Fairley and Ndamukong Suh, there's still a lot of strength there on that defense, so I'm curious to see what this new look Jacksonville line can do to help Blake Bortles in his second year. And so we'll get a good look at that, of course.
And the Lions get Ziggy Ansah back. Or he's going to have his first preseason game this week, too. So, you know, we'll see how that works.
Right, because he's going to be used in more versatile ways this year. You know, every year it seems like he gets more and more involved with the plans on that defense. So kind of see how he gets used in this game. This first came back this summer. And, of course, Minnesota Vikings, Dallas Cowboys just interest me from so many different standpoints. The second year of you know, Mike Zimmer coaching this Minnesota team, the second year of Teddy Bridgewater under center. You know, we're not going to see Adrian Peterson because we don't have to. But I just want to see where this goes, you know, as our first long look at this team, of course, against the Dallas Cowboys, where you've got Tony Romo, you've got Dez Bryant, you've got this great offense. You know, you've got a defense that, you know, outperformed expectations last year. So what is that going to look like this year? We're not going to be able to understand to a full extent what these teams are going to look like in the regular season. But this is a time where you actually game plan for your opponent. You try to simulate a regular season kind of situation, kind of environment, while still being able to, you know, rotate some players in and out and do some more roster evaluation. So it's just going to be, you know, of the preseason, this is clearly the most interesting week of the preseason, and the one that if you're a casual NFL fan who doesn't really pay too much attention to the preseason, this is the week where you can tune in and and
at least for
be
half.
A little bit more entertained, I would
say. At least
assume.
For half, it'll seem more like football.
Exactly. And I'm looking forward to it. We've got some good games coming up all weekend long, so should be an entertaining weekend of football. And again, 2 weeks, just 2 weeks
Absolutely.
Away until the start of the regular season, which means we got to keep going with these divisional previews.
Good point.
So we're going to take a break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. And when we come back, we are going to continue on with our divisional previews, this time with the AFC South. We've got two more divisions to preview, both in the South, AFC and the NFC South. And we're starting things with the AFC when we come back from the break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Stick around.
I'm so stylish, but I ain't talking eBay. No high fashion either. If you catch me by the runway, it's the one that's for the PJ. This one is for my lyricist, courtesy of my DJ. I can't control it, can't hold it, it's so nuts.
We hustle hard in any hustle that you pick.
I respect that.
I had a lot of niggas say they wanna hurt me. So have some weight and just end up at my mercy.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. As we said before the break, we are continuing on with our divisional previews. And this time around, it is the AFC South. Of course, that means the Indianapolis Colts, Houston Texans, Jacksonville Jaguars, and Tennessee Titans. Let's start at the bottom with the 2-14 Tennessee Titans. Of course, the big offseason news for them, having the second overall pick, using it on quarterback Marcus Mariota. Mariota seems to have the starting job locked down, but there are a lot of people who are really calling for Zach Mettenberger to get that nod right now. Mettenberger, clearly one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL, somebody that maybe teams might target as a trade at some point, whether it's once we get the rosters reduced or whatever, but I feel like that would probably be a guy the Titans would want to keep around, even if they're totally set on Mariota for this year. But the real questions, I mean, you look at this offense, you look at this receiving core, and you know, Justin Hunter and Kendall Wright look to be the starting wideouts. They've got a couple other guys. You know, they brought in Harry Douglas. They drafted Dorial Green-Beckham. They brought in Hakeem Nicks. Drafted Trey McBride. They've got a lot of receiving weapons out there, but how they're going to be used and how effective they're going to be is kind of a real question mark when you've got this, you've got a young quarterback, and then you've got questions on offensive line yet again.
Yeah, but it's also that it just seems like a team full of second and third receivers, basically.
It does seem like a team full of second and third receivers, and that's kind of strange to me. Because you look at last year, Justin Hunter and Kendall Wright combined had, 1,200 yards, which is generally the kind of yardage you would expect out of your number one wideout.
At least, yeah.
So I don't know how – I mean, they've got enough guys they could spread the ball around, but do they have playmakers?
Yeah, right. That's a big question. And I mean, even in their running core, they have some guys, but they don't necessarily have weapons, you know, or at least guys that other teams are going to fear or I should say at least game plan
or
against.
Game plan around, yeah. And you know, and then you look at the running back situation, and it looks like Bishop Sankey has the upper hand to be the starter, but then they also have rookie David Cobb. Again, you know, this is a serviceable group of running backs, but is anybody going to light your hair on fire? Is there anybody that you say, oh, we really have to stop this Bishop Sankey?
It's young. He's still young. It's young in his career.
Sure,
so,
absolutely.
You know, maybe he can turn a corner. Maybe things will slow down for him, and he'll turn into more of, we'll say, a threat at that position. I definitely liked Cobb coming out. I think that he's a nice moose back style, if you will, and definitely one of those bigger bowling ball types that bangs through people and all that. So he's fun to watch, but like, you know, it's there's not a lot to, like you said, there's not a lot to fear if you're opposing defenses with this Tennessee squad.
The other thing that's kind of in question right now is obviously that Tennessee defense. They brought in Dick LeBeau, former defensive coordinator of the Pittsburgh Steelers, to come in and be their coordinator / assistant head coach. Hopefully he can work some of that creative blitzing magic with this defense. But there are still questions to be answered, especially at the cornerback position. They bring on Jason McCourty in the offseason, and then now he's undergoing groin surgery, so who knows when they're going to have him back. Bleedy Ray Wilson was kind of in the discussion to start, but right now he's dealing with a high ankle sprain, so they kind of have to lean on Parrish Cox and Cody Sensabaugh. And then you think about the defense up front. I mean, there's a reason why Tennessee only won 2 games last year, and it's because the offense couldn't do anything and the defense couldn't do anything. The offense couldn't do anything to the point last year that Jake Locker has completely retired from the game of football because he was getting smacked around behind an offensive line that couldn't protect him on a team that had no weapons, on a team that had no run game, on a team that had no defense. So are they going to have a run game? Are they going to have an offense? Are they going to have offensive weapons? Are they, you know, it's just, I look at this team and I go, oh, Lord, you know? This is a team where they had Michael Ower as a right tackle last year and got rid of him after 1 year and are trying to start over again at finding effective offensive linemen to protect a rookie quarterback who has a whole bunch of threes and fours as receiving weapons right now.
Yeah. It's a tough situation. I mean, I look at this squad and I see a team that didn't do well last year and that I don't really know what they've done to get that much better. And they're still in, I would say the toughest division in the NFL, but they're not necessarily an easy division, or especially when, you know, you're playing guys like J.J. Watt or the front at least that they have for Houston and the Colts are going to be scary for that team every year, you know, as long as Andrew Luck's around, at least as far as I'm concerned. But Jacksonville seems to be
everybody's improving in this division.
Yeah,
but Tennessee
that's the
feels
thing.
Like they're treading water.
Exactly, and it's, you don't want to tread water if you were the second overall pick in the draft. I mean, that means that you had a bad year, and if you're treading water and you had a bad year, that's not a good scenario. You know?
And you look at Mariota, and he's a very good quarterback and a really great guy and all of this, and he could have a great career in the NFL, but his head coach is Ken Whisenhunt, whose offenses don't really suit the type of quarterback that Mariota is. And then you have Whisenhunt, who's like trying not to lose his job. You know, if this team wins 2 or 3 or 4 games this season, he's going to get fired. So where does that leave Mariota? Where does that leave Mettenberger? Where does it leave every single person on this team?
Yeah, it's tough, too, because, I mean, this is Whisenhunt going into his second year. And, he came in and was, you know, picking up the pieces that they had, and now they're like, you know, making some changes and bringing in different guys and whatnot. And for him to be on the hot seat at this point is a touch premature. But I hear you. You come in, you're supposed to be
this offensive.
If they have a similar year to last
brilliant
year,
and again,
it doesn't look like, it just doesn't feel like they're that much different. They've made some changes. They've brought in some different guys. They've brought in, you know, LeBeau, and they've brought in the different players on offense and defense that, like, you know, they've made changes, but, you know,
are they good changes?
Nothing is overwhelming as far as is people's comfort as in saying that this is going to be an improved team. And they do, like you said, they look like they're just kind of stagnant at this point. And that's not what you want to be, especially being as bad as they were last year. So it's tough to get too excited about this Tennessee squad.
Moving on to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, yes, did better than the Tennessee Titans last year with a 3-13 record.
They put that on their season tickets this year, didn't they? That they were better than the Titans last year.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit about it earlier when we were talking about the Detroit Lions Jaguars preseason game for this weekend. You can say whatever you want about any position on this team. But until that offensive line can improve significantly, Jacksonville is going to struggle.
It's going to be tough.
They gave up 71 sacks last year. They averaged only 88 rushing yards per game. It doesn't matter how excited you can be about, you know, Toby Gearhart, T.J. Yeldon, and Denard Robinson. If the O-line can't block for them, it doesn't matter. You can want Blake Bortles to take a step forward in his second season – but yet he took 71 sacks last year. If the same thing or something similar like that happens this year, he's not going to be able to get the ball. Everybody's very excited about receiver Allen Robinson this year, but it doesn't matter if the quarterback is flat on his back and can't throw the football. So right now it's the offensive line that really has to be.
And the tough part is that they've, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and I believe that those Big Cat Country guys may come after me for saying this if I am wrong, but I believe that they've drafted a couple guys, at least over the last several, or we'll say 3-4 years, drafted the guys highly that to put in that offensive line to try and, you know, turn that corner, to get over that hump and get that offensive line, you know, to where they want it to be, and obviously it's still an issue. So
right, Luke Jokel really hasn't really performed up to his draft billing. You know, they've got Zay Beatles out there.
He was like a top 5 pick, I think.
Yeah,
so.
And now they've established that Steven Wisniewski is going to be the center this year, and hopefully they can improve and avoid injuries, so they don't have to put in some of these depth guys, and they can gain some momentum by just building confidence in one another. You know, and
because you feel like there's a lot going on for the Jaguars. They
brought in Julius Thomas, the tight end. Everybody's very excited about Allen Robinson. I like the way that Toby Gerhardt has ran so far in the preseason. The same can be said for Denard Robinson. You know, but then there's like some other things that are.
And honestly, I thought Bortles had, for a rookie, he had a pretty good year last year, and I thought it was at least a solid foundation for him to build, you know, to build upon and to move forward from. It's like you said, they brought in another receiving threat for him in Julius Green and or Julius Thomas, and you know, with the young receivers they had last year, there's a lot there. You know what I mean? And there's the defensive front. I think there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
They might have some holes in their secondary. Maybe not as much as their offensive line.
They managed to patch a little bit of that. I mean, they signed Chris Clemens, so they added Chris Clemens to the secondary. I've got Devon House, Dwayne Gratz. They're very excited about the safety position is a little up in the air. James Sample right now has a fractured arm. They do have Sergio Brown there though, and of course losing Dontae Fowler Jr. to an ACL tear before the preseason even began.
Yeah, I know.
Really hinders what they wanted to do with their front seven. But you look at all these pieces and you go, this player could be good and this player could be good, and Bortles could take this leap forward, but none of it matters without the offensive line. The offensive line, more than anything, doomed this team last year. You can't have 88 rush yards per game while your quarterback takes 71 sacks in a season and expect to do better than 3 wins.
No, that's clearly the squad that needs to come the furthest, I'd say, for that team before they turn that corner. And but like I said, it's got to be frustrating for the fans there, just because you feel like, you know, they got a lot of things going, they got a lot of pieces that are there, and they are ready. We'll say ready to turn that corner. Whether
it seems
or not
like,
they can,
I mean, it seems like they're prepared for that, because they have been stockpiling assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and making pretty good moves in free agency, making intelligent moves in the draft. I mean, it's not stupid that they drafted Dontae Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
He's like he was the best pure pass rusher in the draft class. He just got hurt.
Mm-hmm. And that's
just dumb luck, you know.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but they do have players in place. But all I can think of is just this offensive line. I mean, they brought in Doug Marrone to be the O-line coach. He's working on tweaking everybody's, you know, fundamentals and their stances and their get-offs and things like that. And Marrone definitely has the qualifications to do that. You know, and an improved O-line coach can work wonders. If you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers with
Munchak.
Mike Munchak.
Yeah.
And what he's done with that offensive line. So it's not unheard of that you can bring in a seasoned offensive line coach, bring in a new guy, work with the guys that you have on the offensive line and get a better result. But that's the one thing that the Jaguars need. If they can't manage that, they're just going to be in trouble again. And it's not fair to guys like Blake Bortles, who, you know, we don't know what his ceiling is because he's behind a trash O-line. It's not fair to a guy like Allen Robinson. We don't know what his ceiling is because his quarterback is behind a trash O-line. We don't know about Toby Gerhardt. We don't know about T.J. Yeldon. And we don't know about Denard Robinson because they're running behind this trash O-line. So if you just make the O-line just 50% better, Not even 100% better. You're going to get a much better result from your offense.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing, though, is that I mean, we talked about this before with teams like how, let's at least say the Lions of 6 years ago or the Browns before maybe 2 years ago or whatever. There's that culture of losing. And I think Jacksonville's another team that needs to cross that threshold because I feel like they were real competitive last year in a lot of games, but still didn't come away with the W's like they maybe could have. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think, granted, this is without much knowledge or being too close to the situation, but I feel like Gus Bradley is a good coach.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely think that his players are bought in.
And he's got a lot of players that could be capable of some stuff. Like you said, there's obviously a big hindrance in this offensive line needing to get itself righted. But on top of that, there is this whole culture that's around the team that they kind of need to get past, you know, and just get over that hump. And squeeze out some games that
right,
they're in.
Right, be able to finish.
Right, that's the thing. It's being in games. There's levels to it. You know, you're either one of those teams that just shows up and you've lost, or you're the type that's going to fight but lose every week. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the step is to take that step from being just getting obliterated to being competitive on a weekly basis,
right,
to the point where you can actually squeeze out some of those wins, and then it really starts to show up in the W column as far as your progress. So I think they could potentially turn that corner this year. But again, a lot of it depends on, you know, we'll say more competent play from the offensive line to get more steady running and better, certainly better protection for Blake Bortles and the receiving corps.
The other thing too on defense is the Jaguars totaled only 6 interceptions last year, worst in the league.
Ugh.
And you're not going to be able to win games when your quarterback's getting hammered, and he's a rookie, so a lot of bad things are going to come out of quarterback play like that.
Sure.
And then you can't generate turnovers on your defense. 6 interceptions is not acceptable, and that's why, you know, they did put a lot of focus onto that secondary in this offseason in hopes of turning that around, because, you know, just a couple of more, if they would have had maybe 12 interceptions last year, that could be the difference between 3 wins and 5 wins, or 3 wins and 6 wins.
Yeah.
Because a game can just turn on one turnover. So that's another thing that the Jaguars really need to focus on is trying to get better, you know, be more aggressive around the football, especially in the secondary, and get those interceptions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on to the 9-7 Houston Texans. We are all watching them very closely every week on HBO's Hard Knocks this year.
One of the best shows on TV. It
Uzuma
really
Nwachukwu.
Easy. Easy with no E in his name.
Easy with no E. Or well, he has a Z, but easy with no E in his name. So Brian Hoyer has been named the starting quarterback, at least for week one, winning the job over Ryan Mallett, mainly because Hoyer does have a little bit more experience.
For now. I don't necessarily see Bill O'Brien as the type of guy that wouldn't yank that away from him very quickly. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And especially because they've spent all offseason and all summer long basically being neck and neck in this competition.
Right.
So, you know, we saw last year that Brian Hoyer is capable of playing very well, and then he's capable of just completely melting down. And if you get those Hoyer meltdowns again this year, you're going to Ryan Mallett. You know, absolutely. You know, the other main thing, of course, Arian Foster, he's going to be shut down for a while. He underwent groin surgery. They do have, of course, Cecil Shorts and Nate Washington, the rookie Jalen Strong. But, you know, you lose a guy like Andre Johnson, and then you don't have Arian Foster, and then you're hoping for Brian Hoyer to be a capable quarterback in this situation. We're obviously looking at a run heavy game plan, which has been in place in Houston even predating the Bill O'Brien era, with Alfred Blue and Chris Polk handling most of the work until and unless Arian Foster comes back. But what this team really is about is that defense with J.J. Watt and up front, and bringing in Vince Wilfork and Jadeveon Clowney getting close to being able to come back and start playing and maybe be ready for week one. So, of course, that's where...
This is J.J. Watt's team.
This is a J.J. Watt defense-first kind of team. And I mean, and it was last year too, and they won 9 games that way.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to do the same thing again.
Exactly.
It's hard to expect too much out of Hoyer and that offense, especially without Arian Foster. And you know, yeah, they got, you know, Blue and Polk back there, and maybe those guys can pick it up. I mean, selfishly speaking, we have Polk on our fantasy team, so I hope he's the guy. But regardless, you know, someone's going to have to step up and fill that void if they're going to achieve any sort of, you know, offensive anything, I guess. I don't know. Because they have DeAndre Hopkins. And Jalen Strong's still a kid. I mean, it's going to be hard to see how long it takes him to take off.
Right.
But it's not the scariest offense in the league by any stretch.
No.
I think DeAndre Hopkins could be, you know, could look really good at least at times.
The thing that makes me nervous about DeAndre Hopkins and Brian Hoyer is Brian Hoyer mm-hmm. loves to key in on number one receivers. The Browns' run game getting decimated by Alex Mack's injury last year was one big problem for that offense. And the other one was when Josh Gordon came back from his suspension. You know, Brian Hoyer was just throwing and throwing and throwing to Josh Gordon, and defenses picked up on that right away. And even though defenses picked up on it, he wouldn't stop doing it. So I kind of worry that Hoyer's going to get really keyed in on DeAndre Hopkins and therefore open himself up to being a predictable passer and, you know, ruin the productivity of a very good receiver like DeAndre Hopkins by over-targeting him and then just getting him shut down every week. So that's something that Hoyer needs to really work on, is spread that ball around. You've got Cecil Shorts, you've got Nate Washington, you got some guys. You don't just have to throw it to DeAndre Hopkins every time.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe this is just because I want him to be this kind of guy, but I think that Hoyer's the type of dude that can, you know, learn from that. Like, he can look back and see, you know, that was clearly an issue, that as soon as Gordon came back, that it was force feeding, and
right.
to the detriment of
the rest of the offense. It was kind of Kyle Shanahan too, because Kyle Shanahan, the then Browns coordinator, was just so pumped
about having him back.
Have
yeah,
Gordon back.
But at the same time, like, it's like you said, they weren't. At least they didn't seem like a completely dysfunctional offense until he came back, which makes zero sense. You get your best receiver, your most talented receiver back, and then all of a sudden you're going to take a step backwards in your productivity because, you know, it's like, oh, well, now all you can do is try and focus on how to get him the ball, and that's, you're getting out of what you were doing, you know what I mean, instead of just working him into what you were doing. So I don't know. I guess I don't necessarily think that's going to be an issue for him. But you never know. It's tough to say. He's not a world beater quarterback. But he's a tough guy that he's got a competitive mentality, and that's really what you want your quarterback to have. You want him to not if they're not going to be one of the handful of quarterbacks that can just throw the team on their back and win games, because that just doesn't come along very often.
Right.
You need them to be the type of guy that doesn't make a lot of mistakes and can make plays where they need to, the right play where they need to, and just really manage the offense and handle themselves. And I think Hoyer can be that kind of guy in the league for a while even. But, you know, he's got to have the right situation around him. And
right.
It's a little thin here, but you know it's his now.
And the defense and the defense really helps out, because you know when Hoyer's with the Browns last year, you know, the Browns have a really great secondary, but they didn't have that push up front to stop the run, to sack the quarterback. Here, Houston is the front seven. You think of the Houston Texans, you think J.J. Watt, you think the front seven. You know, nose tackle Lewis Nix is coming back because he missed his entire rookie year.
It's like the opposite defense of the Browns.
Yes,
where the Browns are really strong in the back and
well, I mean,
but maybe they don't.
Houston's got Stevie Brown and Raheem Moore and Jonathan Joseph out there in the secondary. So you know, they do have some guys out there. They definitely have some veterans out there, some proven guys.
But I'm just saying that their strength is up front, where the Browns' defense, the strength is in the back.
Correct. But that helps out. You know, regardless of where this defense is strong at, and we know where it's strong at, the fact that the defense can kind of carry this team puts a lot less pressure on Hoyer. And it puts a lot less pressure on guys like Blue and Polk to kind of, you know, we have to be Arian Foster in order for us to be able to run the ball and have there be an offense here. So that's the saving grace, you know, for the Houston Texans is, like, at least that defense is as good as it is, as dangerous as it is, because if Hoyer can just be a marginal game manager, mm-hmm. they can still pull out a 9-win season or a 10-win season yet again.
Assuming their running game is going to be able to hold its own. And
right.
I'm not saying it won't. I'm just saying that that's a question mark right now.
Right. But, I mean, it's always a question mark even when Arian Foster is healthy, because it's always like, well, how long is he going to stay healthy?
Well, right. You have that caveat, certainly.
And finally, the Indianapolis Colts, who went 11-5 last year and are many people's picks to be the AFC team to reach the Super Bowl this year. The Colts added Andre Johnson, wide receiver formerly of the Houston Texans. They brought on running back Frank Gore, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers. And they also have pass rusher Trent Cole, formerly of the Philadelphia Eagles. They're also going to get Robert Mathis back after he suffered served a four-game suspension last year and then injured his Achilles. So, this team is starting to look a little bit better on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, of course, with Johnson and Gore coming in on top of having T.Y. Hilton, Daron Carter, Dante Moncrief, and, of course, the rookie Philip Dorsett, who's probably just going to return punts and kicks, even though he's a round one pick. There's a lot of stuff to like here. The Josh Robinson and Dan Heron being the backups for Frank Gore, both very promising running backs, who, especially Dan Heron with his pass catching ability, got a lot of things to really like here. And year after year, since bringing in Andrew Luck in 2012, they've continued to improve the offensive line around him, so he's getting hit less and less because he throws so much.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this whole team, and I can see why they're a Super Bowl darling this year.
Yeah, I mean I always take caution when a lot of people are talking about one team as being Super Bowl favorites, because frankly, I find picking Super Bowl favorites this time of year is awful hard.
The Colts are your Super Bowl favorite in the AFC, Brian.
If not flipping coins, nah, it was that one night we were having arguments, so or a debate, spirited debate. It's can they address those deficiencies that they've had? I'm a big believer in Frank Gore. I have been for a while, and I think that's a great addition to this team. But at the same time, that's been a question mark for them, and how much of it was related to the guys they had in the backfield, and how much was related to the guys on the line is something that can be discussed for hours by Colts fans, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I think they're probably a step closer on all areas there. They're just that team that, like, they don't necessarily have. I think Andrew Luck is probably, it's going to be hard to argue, is one of the better quarterbacks, especially for his age, in the league. Outside of that, This is a team that seems very mediocre to good in most areas.
Right.
But I think that's also a recipe that can work, and it's that balance and being just a solid team, and then kind of going back to what I was saying about Jacksonville earlier, where they need to turn that hump to learn how to win those games. Indy's done that, and
right.
They have that ability to play. Two years ago, they were a team that played everybody tough and did win a couple games, but also fell short a lot. And they've turned that corner to be
right. There was so much reliance on Andrew Luck
to
throw them out of holes and get these fourth quarter comebacks, which he did quite regularly. But at the same time, you can't just keep asking your quarterback to carry this entire team when there's just so many other issues that if you address them, he wouldn't have to, and it would be better for everybody.
Right, and it just makes everything easier, you know, and so I think the team as a whole is more solid than anything, but with a guy like Luck, leading the charge, you know, the sky's the limit, and that's why there is so much optimism at this point, I think, so. It'll be definitely be interesting to watch. They've got a lot of pieces in place, and you know, it's really how far can they go? They've been making incremental steps in the playoffs, and you know, are they for sure a Super Bowl team? I think that's tough to say just because it's so early, and I think they're as far as being a playoff team, I think that that's as close to a lock as you can get in this division, at least.
Sure.
They should make the playoffs.
Sure.
I can say that comfortably.
Yeah, I can say that comfortably, too. They should.
This time of year, I don't really like to speak beyond who's playoff teams or in the mix to be in the playoffs. Because beyond that, it's really, you know, it's a tough thing to do to get it. A lot of things have to happen to get to the Super Bowl. It's not just about the best team.
No. There's random occurrences. There's how healthy are you are down the stretch. It's how is your schedule structured?
Exactly.
Not just who you play, but when. But the other thing to consider is that you might not see them as a Super Bowl team, but it might be Super Bowl or bust for Chuck Pagano. There's a lot of talk that Chuck Pagano, the head coach of the Colts, is on a very hot seat.
Why?
Jim Irsay wants a Super Bowl out of this team.
He wants
playoff wins. Chuck Pagano was offered a 1-year contract extension. He turned it down. He doesn't want a 1-year deal. He wants long term or nothing. And basically, we're going to find out the future of Chuck Pagano based on the win loss record and the playoff, the playoff win loss. Of the Colts this year.
But that's the thing. Like I said, we just got done saying how this team has made the playoffs the last couple of years and been making incremental steps in the playoffs. I mean, if they make it to the playoffs...
Well, they were one and done last year.
No. They beat... I can't remember who. They beat somebody last year because they played... They were in the AFC
championship
game last year.
Oh, yeah,
that's
right. Never mind. Who was I thinking of? Arizona.
Yeah, okay. But this is what I'm saying is this is a team that's made steps over the last several years, and they've made it to the playoffs each of those years.
Right.
And they've made it a little bit further each of those years.
But Irsay and the Colts want to see more.
I don't know. I'm telling you, whenever I hear this stuff, all I think about is Schottenheimer.
Oh, of course.
A guy that takes the team to the playoffs every year.
No, the Schottenheimer thing
just
killed me.
And it just wasn't enough. And
the Chargers
again,
have never been that good since.
Absolutely. And he was a guy that was famous for being good enough to take you to the playoffs, but maybe can't turn that corner. And I can even understand that frustration. But these are other coaches. Pagano hasn't been around but 3-4 years, and he's done nothing but take the team to the playoffs. So why should his seat be even remotely warm? There's no reason for this.
Well, I think it's also the fact that he doesn't have a contract right now and that he turned down that 1-year contract.
If it's contractual, then...
There's some contract stuff going on there. They might not want him around for the long term. They might only want him as a short-term deal right now. So that's something to keep in mind, is that the pressure, whether warranted or not, is on Pagano this year.
I'm becoming increasingly impatient with teams increasing impatience. With their coaches, with their quarterbacks,
with lots of
stuff.
I saw what happened with Chudzinski.
Because there's something to be said about progress, and there's also another thing to be said about teams that are in it every year, because you can be Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and they won the Super Bowl in 2010, 2011, that year, I believe. And nobody's talking about changing the coach there and changing the quarterback there just because they haven't won a Super Bowl since then. You know what I mean? It's like that's a no-brainer. Everybody says, well, that's the best quarterback in the league, and that's one of the best coaches in the league. And I agree. And they're always in it. But that's fine. All you got to do is be in it. You have to be in the conversation at the end of the year. You don't necessarily have to win the Super Bowl every year to be worth keeping your job. Sorry.
I agree. But I am just saying that warranted or not.
I'll get off my soapbox now.
Chuck Pagano's on the hot seat.
Anyway,
what I'm really excited to see about the Indianapolis Colts is Frank Gore. You know,
yes.
Frank Gore he's really pumped about working with Andrew Luck.
It'll be the best quarterback he's ever worked with.
Best quarterback he's definitely ever worked with. Frank Gore has also just managed to look ageless as a running back, and I'm just curious to see if that trend will continue with his new team. But even if not, I mean, guys like Boom Heron and Josh Robinson, I mean, they've got a nice depth chart at running back. And I think that's going to really help out Andrew Luck. If the O-line issues kind of take a step backward, if there's a regression with the O-line, at least there are people he can throw the ball to real quick before he gets hurt. And he's very capable of doing that because he's a very capable quarterback anyway. So I'm curious to see if maybe you bring in Andre Johnson. So you still have a veteran presence, even though you don't have Reggie Wayne anymore. And you bring in Frank Gore, who's a proven ageless pile move and commodity. If maybe these little things can be that catalyst to take the Colts to that next level and get them to win an AFC championship game this time around.
Well, I mean, I just feel like the Colts are at the point where for their next step is going to be to be the team that beats down people every week.
Yes.
Or at least the poor,
like when you start getting scared of them, like the Seahawks or the Patriots.
Exactly.
Or the Packers.
Right. They come to your stadium and everybody's fearing them. And it's not that they won't ever lose or they won't play close games. It's just that they beat the bad teams real bad, and they're gonna be a tough out if you're one of the best teams and you have to play them. So they're at that point. And I think a guy like Frank Gore, especially with some of the younger guys he's working with there, I mean, I think that I agree. That's a good little stable they have. You know, the question really comes down to the line and how well they both, you know, pass block and run block. So it's an interesting team to watch this year, I think. And I think there's a lot of hype, and I think that a lot of it is deserved. We'll have to see if they can take those steps and be this, you know, league dominator type team.
Indeed. Well, I think that about wraps it up for our AFC South preview this week.
Yeah, I think that'll do.
It's hard for me to look at these four teams and see any outcome other than the Colts winning this division. Of course, lots of things could happen to change that. Injuries being a leading cause of things like that. But at this point, you know, I think that we can safely say that Houston will either stay where they're at or get a little better. Jacksonville seems like they're getting better, and Tennessee just looks like they're treading water.
Just kind of hanging out.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we're going to send it on home for this week, so stay tuned.
All right. And you can take the cassette deck from off of your old boombox, and it wouldn't matter. It still squares on your radio. To keep your wealth, I learned to stay to your self. I call for char, tell him spray paint a mural in Watts. With me spray painting the mural of Miracle Watts. Shout out to Michael, 5,000 watts. I'm on that lean movement like I'm out here trying to box. Look, nigga, this is a boss thing. Meaning you get in the lace dot to your offspring. I'm a lost being. Try to cross me without falling off. I'm afraid not. I'm afraid not like a drawstring. I'm preaching to the congregation like I'm Peter Popoff. If you can imagine me hopping up out of the cabin like I'm one of the Dukes of Hazzard. Like,
well, that wraps things up here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Thanks for joining us again this week. Listen to us talk about some of these injuries and news stories around the league. And, of course, joining us as we break down the AFC South in our divisional preview. It means there's one divisional preview left next week, the NFC South.
Just in time.
And then we'll be back on the 9th of September, the week after that, and we'll be back on our minute picks
for
week one of the NFL regular season. So we have all that to look forward to. I'm your host here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. My name is Andrea Hankst. I cover the Browns and the Steelers for BleacherReport.com, the Cleveland Browns for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and the entire National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com and TheSportsDaily.com. You can also find me on the Twitter machine at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian, and outside of this podcast, I can be found on the Twitters at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, thank you kindly, everybody, for listening to the F-Ball NFL podcast this week. We've got some really good football games coming up this weekend in preseason week 3, so hope you all get to enjoy them, and we'll be back next week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace.